Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. It is 408, 89 degrees here on this Monday, June 30th, 2025. Last day of June, start July tomorrow, long weekend for most people. There are a lot of people it won't be a long weekend for, and I appreciate you working on America's birthday. So we had this tragedy out in Idaho where this 20-year-old individual, and we'll get into that in a minute because they have been identified. 20-year-old started, started a fire, a wildfire. When fire department crews came to start battling about a half an hour into their response, into the dealing with the battle of fire, gunshots rang out, killing two of the firefighters, injuring a third, I believe. And there was a barrage of gunfire that even the sheriff's department said that they were pinned down because of. Now, they had a federal response there. And when the federal technical teams get there, it's great assets on the ground to have. And they were able to do a scan for electronic devices, for signatures of cell phones or any device. Because, again, they had no clue what they were dealing with. Is this a coordinated effort? They didn't know how many shooters there were. What are we dealing with here? And they were able to get a signature on that. Now, places like the NYPD, where I'm mostly familiar with, we have our own. It's called TARU. Technical Assistance Response Unit, TARU. T-A-R-U. And they do a lot of the same things. But in a place like New York City, where you have tens of thousands of electronic devices and signatures, if you know what you're looking for, you can isolate it. But other than that, it's like finding a needle in a haystack, which they can do. It's just more time may be needed. But here, they were able to find a signature in a wooded area, the vicinity where the shots were coming from. And they were able to get tactical teams to move in on the individual. And when they got there, they found the individual with a weapon not far from him. It appears to be a self-inflicted wound at this point. Again, all preliminarily. I think if law enforcement took this individual out, we would have heard that pretty rapidly because they were every rightly so in their jurisdiction to do so. He was opening fire and killed two people. The devastation to the community, targeting firefighters. We've seen and we've become unfortunately accustomed to law enforcement under attack, especially with these attacks on ICE, which make no mistake, they're federal law enforcement, like what they do or not. And if you have that much of a problem what they do, change the laws that you're making them enforce. It's not their fault that you don't have the stomach to enforce the very rules that you voted for people to pass. And until you can do so, I'm sorry. They should not be a target for your convenience on social media. And that's, it seems, what law enforcement, especially ICE these days, has gone. But we've seen these attacks. And, fire departments get into this realm, every now and then. But for them to be specifically targeted, now that they know who this individual is and they've already scrubbed his social media platforms off, while I was looking at one of his platforms, it was taken offline. So, it wouldn't refresh, and then a second later, it was just gone. And, there's already a media narrative because his stepfather and mother have pictures with Make America Great Again hat on to say, oh, my, it makes sense. But they leave out the fact that the family had a protection order from the child where he couldn't come near them, his own family. Had a protection from abuse order to where he could not, a no contact warrant to where he could not come near them. This is a 20-year-old. Originally from Russia, came here very early, lived in New York, lived in Florida, was out in Idaho for work. So it's interesting how we're going to tag him to his parents or his parents to him all of a sudden, even though it appears they're total opposites of the spectrum. If you looked at some social media that's already been dug up and the individual who hates police, fire, the government, any authority figures, has already been arrested for stabbing a woman with a knife, was charged with felony assault, pled down to a misdemeanor assault, got 180 days in prison, and got 150 day suspended sentence. So ended up only spending 30 days, which was probably pre-trial and such like that. So was it really the punishment or the learning curve that this individual needed, again, before the age of 20, because he's 20 now? Had battled mental issues to the point where the family had got an order of protection, a protection from abuse, where he could not contact them. And then this happens. But they find a picture of his parents, and it's, you know what, the political spectrum that we don't like, so we're going to blame it on that. So if we're blaming parents now for the kid's actions, can that work both ways? Are we going to blame Joe Biden for Hunter Biden? I mean, we blamed Hunter Biden for Hunter Biden and Joe Biden for giving them the access that he did. But, you know, Joe Biden himself was not responsible for Hunter Biden's criminal behavior. But it seems now that that's okay. Again, so there's a lot of that out there for the narrative that wants. Here is a person with severe psychiatric issues that did not like authority figures, had a propensity to violence already because he's been arrested for stabbing a woman with a knife, did not learn his lesson from the justice system because they coddled him and were easy on him, and here we are. Two firemen's families are without their hero. The community is without two heroes. There's a lot still unknown. I'm sure there'll be press conferences today filling in. But the 20-year-old shooter at this time has been ID'd as Wes Rowley. And again, his parents had a restraining order against him. He's been in jail for assaulting someone with a knife. It's not even from Idaho. He was just there to work. There's a lot of questions to be answered here. Now, I get the scrubbing of social media, but why the rush? Why are authorities so quick to find out what a social media is and get it scrubbed? Now, they're getting copies of everything, mind you. Anything you put on social media is always there. Don't think because you delete it or you cancel your account or you shut it down. You know, we used to do warrants for social media, and you get everything. Everything, even the stuff you've deleted. So, little word to the wise, deleting stuff isn't going to get anywhere. But why wouldn't you want the public to get a better grasp on? You have a lot of people in the nation asking why this happened. Why would you target firemen that just came to, I mean, purposely set a fire to draw them in and then target them? Just goes to show, you know, how depraved this individual is. And that's exactly what this is. And the fact that they really didn't know what they were dealing with, the technical expertise when you get the federal entities involved or some larger police departments involved that vastly helped this situation to narrow it down, get a scan, get a signal from his cell phone. Thankfully, it was on. Thankfully, there was something electronic there that they could get. Because you just don't want to send dogs out because you don't know what you're facing. They didn't know the strength of the force, meaning how many people. They didn't know if this was a coordinated effort. They did not know much of anything except they were taking fire and two people already killed, a third injured. Law enforcement, when they got there, were taking fire to pin them down. That's a terrifying scene. And the fact that they did not have him in custody for a while, the fact that they did not know what they were dealing with, concerns not only the community but the entire state. What if he gets out of the perimeter? And you have to realize, while this is going on, exactly that is happening. They're setting up an inner and outer perimeter. How much time, you know, when was the last time a shot was fired? How much time, depending on if he had a vehicle, if he had a dirt bike or a motorbike, you know, is he walking or running? How far can they get? Well, let's set a perimeter outside that and contain it as best we can. And in rural areas, if you look where this was, it was very forested, very rural. You know, there may be dirt roads that you might have to put somebody every 50 feet or every 100 feet or on every turn. This is an immense effort when something like this happens. So not only are they dealing with extracting the victims who were shot, covering the people who were there who were pinned down who could not move, getting assets in, but they're also doing the outer perimeter, getting assets there from the federal government, from all entities, to where they could set up this technical sweep, get drones up so they can get signatures, heat signatures. Let's get infrared. Let's get what we can up there. Getting helicopters and aviation assets, the drones that are used a lot now. This was an immense effort from all entities. For what? Because some 20-year-old had a switch or had his wiring messed up in his brain and decided he was going to take firemen on. He was going to set a fire to purposely lure firemen in. Not armed police. Not anyone else, firemen. And I think that hits a nerve with most people in America. I think when this came off, it was very troubling. It's interesting because this was going on, and then last night about 8 o'clock, there was an advisory put out for the Naval Academy that they were taking five victims from one of the parade fields to the hospital. It didn't say, it said there was an incident, and they were transporting five victims to the hospital. And this was just a couple hours, and while this was still going on in Idaho. So I was like, all right, is there some sort of coordinated effort? With everything going on in the world, is there something else here? It turned out it was just heat exhaustion. They were having their first parade practice at the Naval Academy. The new class of plebes, which are their freshmen, come in for basically their summer boot camp. These are people from around the nation who some of them have never dealt with heat and humidity before, especially humidity. And if you've ever been to Maryland in the summer, the humidity is something specific. And a lot of them pass out. A lot of them don't know how to deal with that. A lot of them have never done day-to-day physical activity. If you're on the parade ground and you lock your knees, they go down. They have people called body snatchers who are people in camouflage that go out, grab them, drag them off, and treat them. You know, hydrate them, get them going again. It's normal. But in the day, in the time we're in the news cycle we're in, we're dealing, and I'm looking at this Idaho, you know, active shooter with snipers and people down, and they don't know what they're dealing with. And then you hear there are casualties at the Naval Academy, you know, it gets you wondering, it gets you concerned. And again, thankfully, it was just heat exhaustion. So our prayers to the fire community out there. And public safety in general, because this hopefully does not trigger anything else down, because this is a group of men and women, our fire services, that will run into burning buildings for you and I and your family, regardless of your political beliefs, regardless of your religion, your income, anything. They train and they practice and they have committed in their heads that they are going to run into one of the most dangerous situations there is to save you or your family, your pet. Some even see your belongings. For them to be targeted is just a travesty all around. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 426, 89 degrees outside. You know, I read this story coming out of Florida, and it will concern me. And since a lot of people vacation in Florida and, you know, do the vacation thing, you know, I've done it. I've gone in my kayak or canoe, and I've seen alligators, and I've seen the stuff like that. Well, an alligator mauled and killed wife, 61, canoeing with her husband as Florida urges vacationers to avoid disaster. It's a truly troubling and heartbreaking story. Florida wildlife authorities have released a new report on a vicious May alligator attack that took the life of a Michigan woman. She was 61, was killed while canoeing with her husband near Lake Kissimmee State Park. I've actually kayaked in this very lake. When they unknowingly approached an 11-foot, 4-inch alligator lurking beneath the surface. So they didn't even know it was there. Report from Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation says, according to local news, the FWC said the alligator thrashed underneath the canoe, causing the pair to be thrown into the water. The victim was immediately bitten on the torso, and efforts by the husband to assist her were unsuccessful, according to the report. The alligator performed what they do, it's called a death roll, and swam away with the victim. You can't even put yourself in a position like that, so I won't even try. That had to be – that helpless situation you're in. I mean, this is an 11-foot alligator. Amid the release of the report, Florida Wildlife Service announced a new partnership with GatorWise, described as a new public awareness campaign that aims to promote realistic public perceptions about alligators and assist the public in taking appropriate actions to minimize contact. In order to help Floridians and tourists navigate the waters during the summer when alligators' attacks become more common, Florida has seen a tremendous population growth in recent years, with many people living or recreating near water. The Alligator Management Program Coordinator for the Florida Wildlife Commission said a partnership because alligators can be found in nearly any water in Florida. It's safest to always assume they are present. GatorWise provides constant science-based information from across the Southeast to help people safely share and landscape with these important animals. I was down about a year before I came here, I was invited down to Hilton Head Island, to where I was offered a position down there to help run a community and manage a community down there. And they had ponds, and it was you've been to Hilton Head Island, a lot of you. And you have the ocean, the bay. There's some fresh water, you know, ponds around there. And basically, if there's water, there's an alligator in it, was their motto. Because one of the things that when I was taking a tour with the heads of the community there, you know, I never dealt with alligators before. You know, pretty honest and upfront about this. You know, I've dealt with bears, I've dealt with wildlife, I've dealt with things like that. But alligators, you are not my thing. So I wanted to put that out front. And basically, they have professionals that deal with that. The South Carolina wildlife officials deal with it if there's any issues. But if it's wet, there's an alligator, and it was pretty much what they said. So, you know, that's the rule of thumb that they go by. And it's interesting because if you follow me on social media, last week I posted a picture. There was a black bear walking down my road. And it's interesting because my wife was walking on that road 10 minutes before I took the video with this bear on the road. And the bear was about 250 pounds. You know, it was a juvenile, real nice, healthy bear. Not huge, but, you know, 250 pounds is not small either. You know, my wife weighs, 120 pounds, 115 pounds? So, literally, I know she just got back in the house when I was pulling out of the driveway. And I saw the bear, and I took a video of it, and I sent it to her, and I says, "Hey, did you walk up this far?" And she's like, "I just walked by there." I'm like, "All right, well, your friend was probably watching you from the woods." And I sent it to my daughter-in-law and my son to say, "Hey, this was on our road." And my daughter-in-law was like, "Oh, another reason why your son will never talk me into moving to Pennsylvania." I said, "Oh, they're harmless." And she was like, "So are alligators if you stay away from them." Because down where she lives, alligators are the thing. And my son said he doesn't want to deal with alligators. So they're push and tug about where they want to live in life later on between Pennsylvania or down south is turns into alligators and bears. So this is just a tragic situation there. I'm glad they are doing more to especially tourists who maybe not take this into advisement. I mean, they were in a canoe, thought they were safe. They drifted over this big 11-foot alligator. Alligator got spooked, thrashed, threw them into the water, grabbed one. And that's it. You got an 11-foot alligator, you're not standing a chance. There are an estimated 1.3 million alligators in Florida. Last year, there were a total of 11 bites, 9 considered major, 2 minor. No fatalities. In 2023, there were 23 alligator bites, 18 major, and 5 minor. So a tragedy, no doubt, here. 61-year-old woman and husband witnessed the whole thing and tried to do what he could. But they ended up capturing the gator and putting it down, but obviously too late. It's 4:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. On this section of the show, we honor our heroes here at Mahomin and law enforcement who made the ultimate sacrifice on this day, June 30th, throughout history. On this day, we have one from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Lieutenant Albert Burt Burris, Pittsburgh Bureau of Police in Pennsylvania in 1925 on this day. He suffered a fatal heart attack when he was under gunfire from several burglary suspects in the 4800 block of Fifth Avenue. Officers were notified by a private guard that three men had broken into his home. When the officers arrived at the scene, the three suspects attempted to flee. As Lieutenant Burris chased one of them, the man turned around and fired a shot at him. The shot missed, but Lieutenant Burris immediately collapsed. One of the suspects was arrested inside the home after backup officers responded to the scene. The remaining two were captured a short distance away after witnesses informed officers of their whereabouts. Lieutenant Burris had served with the Pittsburgh Police Department for over 22 years, was survived by his wife. Again, this was June 30th, 1925. That said, you know, we also want to extend the condolences for the firefighters out in Idaho that lost their lives and their families. It was fitting to see the procession of the bodies of the two firefighters, where every overpass and every exit had members of local fire departments standing at attention, waving their flags and saluting their brother as they drove to the medical examiner. And it just goes to show the bond that our first responders have together. And hopefully this was an anomaly, because when you're targeting people like our fire crews, our EMS crews, you're targeting the best of society. You're targeting people who are literally have signed on the dotted line to risk their lives, to not see their family again for the job they do to save you in your home, your car, get you another day with your family, another year with your family. So it's devastating when that's attacked. It truly is. Even as, you know, a first responder myself for decades now, you know, having been an EMT, having been, you know, in the police service, you know, when you see stories of our firemen being targeted simply for doing their job, using their job to set up targeting them, it hits home. It's disgraceful. It's 4:40 here at WILK. We'll be back. Here's the Storm Tracker 16 forecast. Tonight, partly cloudy and muggy, a low of 71. Tuesday, tomorrow, clouds with breaks of sun, some showers and thunderstorms possible, a high of 85. Wednesday, mostly sunny, a high of 85. It is currently 89 degrees here at 4:40 at your official weather station, WILK. Well, it's time for Today in History on the Rob O'Donnell Show, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? So we have some key events here on this day in history. On June 30th, 1815, the end of the Barbary Wars, a peace treaty between the U.S. and the Dey of Angliers was signed, officially ending the Barbary Wars, securing the release of American sailors. 1905, Einstein publishes Special Relativity. Albert Einstein's groundbreaking paper, The Founding of Special Relativity, was published in 1905. Genius, genius. 1934, Night of the Long Knives. Though centered in Germany, this purge had international reverberations. On June 30th, Adolf Hitler executed a violent sweep within his party, marking a chilling moment in modern authoritarian history. 1936, Gone with the Wind was published. Margaret Mitchell's epic novel emerged this day, later becoming a cinematic and cultural phenomenon. 1953, the first Chevrolet Corvette rolls off the line. A new era of American automotive design began with the very first Corvette, was built in Flint, Michigan. It was 1953. It's interesting. When I was up in Saratoga Springs 2 weeks ago, they have a Corvette display. So if you're into Corvettes, you want to head up to Saratoga, New York, and go to the museum. They have a Corvette display going on right now. They have the Corvette Mako. It was the precursor to the Stingray. And it's got a bluish, baby blue paint scheme that kind of fades. Unbelievable car. I took some pictures of it when it was up there. They also have the 78 Pace car, which was the first two-tone, but it was limited edition. I have an 81 Corvette with claret and dark claret two-tone. It was the first production two-tone ever for a Corvette. So I have one of them. Actually, it's my son and I have it now. It's his. But we have it. And I ended up reaching out to Corvette, to General Motors. You can reach out to the factory, and they gave me a copy of the original build sheet and the window sticker for my car. You just give them the VIN number, you give them all the information they need, and they pull the original build sheet and window sticker. So I have them laminated. They're in the car. Just a great piece of history. And I was just thinking, in 2031, 50 years old, that car will be. But in 1953, the first one rolled off the assembly line. 1958, the Senate passes Alaska statehood. The U.S. Senate passed the Alaska Statehood Act, 64-20, setting the stage for Alaska to join the Union as the 49th state. You know, that would be interesting to look into. Who were the 20 senators that voted against making Alaska a state? That would be some interesting. I may do a little research on that. I'm sure they had good reasons to. Maybe, you know, let's not take on another burden. But was it really? You know, it was strategically sound decision to make, obviously. But it'd be interesting to find out the reasons and who those 20 senators were that voted against making Alaska a state. Supreme Court upholds Pentagon Papers publication. In a vital press freedom ruling, the court declared that the government could not block the New York Times or Washington Post from publishing Pentagon Papers. That was 1971. 1971 as well, the Soyuz 11 tragedy, though not American, the fatal reentry of Soviet Soyuz 11 influenced global space policy, highlighting shared perils of space exploration. Notable birthdays on this day, June 30th. I just saw him on TV this morning. He was talking about legalizing marijuana. Mike Tyson, 1958, legendary heavyweight boxing champion. Michael Phelps, 1985. Most decorated Olympic swimmer in history. Vincent D'Onofrio, 1965. Actor known for Law and Order, CI, and Full Metal Jacket. Some U.S.-linked and global events that shaped America. 1966, the National Organization for Women, NOW, was founded in Washington, D.C., marking a key milestone for the Americans' woman rights movement. 1960. What do you think happened in 1960? Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho premiered, influencing film and pop culture in the United States and worldwide. So these are some of I just got a text message and it said, vets are kind of cool, but not as cool as the V10 Viper. Yeah, but which one is still around? Come on, Corvettes are an icon. They're historic, except for those C4s. Those C4 clamshell ones, no one wants those. Though, even those are collected. But the last of the Stingrays, come on. And I understand, you know, mine was right after the changes, so it's got the smaller engine. But it's still, you hit the gas, it still wants to move. It's okay for me. It's fine for what I need it for. But even that, I was, the 2 weekends ago, I had a $750,000 Lamborghini, and you could get a $130,000 Corvette, brand new Corvette, and it's faster, and it's better in a lot of aspects. Now, it's not a Lamborghini. I get that. Just think about it. You have a $750,000 Lamborghini. You want to get an oil change, you got to ship it to New Jersey or Boston, and it's going to cost you $5,000. That's right. An oil change on that Lamborghini cost $5,000. You could take your Corvette, your brand new 2025 Corvette, to any Chevy dealer in America and get your oil change for $100. So, you do the math. I would... You know, if I had the extra ching running around, I would get the brand new Corvette mid-engine and just put it in a garage somewhere. It'll no doubt, hold its worth. Just the way it was. Think about if you would have taken one of the Mustangs and put it in a garage 50 years ago, or a Corvette. You know, my Corvette, the thing I like about my 81 Corvette is, except for the radio, and I'm looking into changing that, everything on my Corvette is 100% stock. My car is unmolested. Everything's the way it was when it came off the assembly line, except for the radio. And you can get aftermarket radios now where you can do Bluetooth and CarPlay that look like the original stock radio. So I think maybe down the road that's what we're going to do. But we'll see. Jersey Devil, why do you think I gave it to my son? Jersey Devil's being a wise guy. But he knows. You get into the passenger seat with me and we'll see how it works. But he's the problem about getting into the Corvette and out of the Corvette. It's one of the reasons I gave it to my son. You know, I would love to work on it to, you know, get the interior, you know, back to new, because you could get any part you want. They have catalogs for everything. I'm just cannot fit taking the dashboard apart, putting a new radio in, and all the rest of the things that need to get done. But, you know, I kept it for a reason. Could easily sold it. I says, no, I think this is the perfect car for a fighter pilot to drive around in. Historic. It's 4:53 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 4:56 here, 88 degrees. When we come back after the 5 o'clock break, we're going to have the Arizona State Representative, a friend of mine, who covers Prescott, Arizona, which is home of the Granite Mountain. And if you're not aware, today is the anniversary of the Granite Mountain hotshot tragedy, where 19 of those rural firefighters were killed in a tragic accident. There's a great memorial out there. I have yet to visit it. I want to get out there to visit it and pay my respects to it. When I do get out there, I've been meaning to, but just have not gotten west a lot. But today's the anniversary of that tragedy. So I figured it was fitting to have the state representative from that district, that Prescott, Arizona, the home of Granite Mountain and the memorial. I know he's done a lot and has visited the memorial many times. So we're going to have him on at the 5 o'clock hour when we come back from the break. So I just wanted to put that out there. We were talking about today in history, and Wyoming Commemorative Association is going to observe the 247th anniversary of the Battle of Wyoming. And they're going to do that remembrance of the battle and massacre of Wyoming at 10 a.m. on July 4th at the Wyoming Monument National Historic Site in Wyoming Avenue, Wyoming County. It's the 147th observance of this annual event, which began in 1878 to remember the 100th anniversary of the battle, the most significant Revolutionary War battle fought in northeast Pennsylvania. The event begins with a concert by the Wyoming Valley Band, and we'll have a traditional floral tribute. The keynote speaker of this event will be Haley Hadleman Esquire, the chair of the Pennsylvania Historic and Museum Commission, Pennsylvania's official history agency. Professionally, she is the chief of the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, a premier nonprofit performing arts of southwest Pennsylvania. The event chair and master of ceremonies will be Lindsay Griffin Boylan, president and chief executive officer of the Wyoming Valley Chamber of Commerce. There'll be clergy, including local reverend and a lieutenant colonel, U.S. Army retired chaplain. The event is free and open to the public. There will be a tent-covered seating will be available at it. The event was first held in 1878, 100 years of the local battle, which was fought in 1778. The main speaker at the first ceremony was U.S. President Rutherford B. Hayes. So if you're looking for something to do historic for our area, Wyoming County, the Commemorative Association will hold the 247th anniversary in remembrance of the Battle and Massacre of Wyoming, 10 a.m. on July 4th. I highly recommend it. I highly recommend you bring your kids. Let them learn about history. Let them learn about the sacrifices that were right here in our backyard to make America independent and free. It's a great tribute to our area. It looks like a great event. And, you know, as we're doing things like this here, Wyoming County, celebrating one of the most integral battles in the Northeast, especially here in Pennsylvania. You're going to talk about L.A. L.A. has canceled 4th of July. L.A. has canceled 4th of July. The city of Los Angeles has canceled events on the 4th of July, the birth of America, because they're fear-mongering for illegal immigrants who are invading America. So they're afraid that ICE might show up and might try and deport them. So they canceled the Birth of America celebration in Los Angeles. You just can't make it up. You can indeed. It's 5 o'clock here at WILK. We'll be back after the breaks.